Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Thank you. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
You've tried everything known to man, and it didn't work. Nobody tells you you're 2,000 cold calls away from being rich. If you make 2,000 cold calls, you'll be worth $10 million in 6 months. A cold call meaning you talk to a decision maker, an owner, not a fucking flabby-titted secretary, not a receptionist. You don't leave a fucking message. You talk to a decision maker, 2,000 cold calls, and you'll be rich. Guaranteed. But you won't make 20 calls. Josh Kim made 300 calls a fucking day. It's not by accident the little skinny shit teenager in this fucking jet plane. But you're slow. I'm asked if you started on the 1st of September or whatever month you want to, how long would it take me to do all the things that I tell you that takes 3 to 7 years? 30 to 45 days. 45 days if I fucked everything up. We have guys doing it now in 45, 60, 75 days, and they can't find their ass with both hands tied behind them. But they're making the calls, and they're, you know, all the stuff's on the website. And the webinars are, the YouTube, I call them webinars, the YouTube stuff is golden. 250,000 kids start businesses every year in America. One makes it to the big time. meaning billion, like a Zuckerberg. Maybe nine make it to what I would call the second league. You'd call it the first league, but I'd call it the second league. Because they're trying to do deals that aren't real deals. The beauty of the QLA model, notwithstanding the simplicity, is that you don't need anything other than somebody that wants to sell as much as you want to buy. The ideal customer, ideal person, they tease me in the industry, a motivated seller to Pena is the wife just had a stroke and is in a wheelchair, and the husband is spitting up blood from an emphysema. Now, that's a goddamn motivated seller. Now, see, you don't know that there are millions of motivated sellers like that because you've never looked. When you go and offer your board free founder's equity, that's free equity in the founding NewCo company, they will be all over you like a cheap suit because they've worked for all these big companies. LinkedIn is the best sales tool that was ever invented for this program. LinkedIn. Because all the 2 or 5 or 7 million people on LinkedIn have one thing in common. They want to make money. And they work for, and you want people that are about to retire or already recently retired, and they can't make ends meet. Very few people can make ends meet, meaning they live paycheck to paycheck. Is that still a term you use? They live paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth. They live hand to mouth. And you wouldn't be surprised. How, now, I wasn't Josh Kim's chairman, although he did ask me, but I wanted him to do it because I could see talent. But when a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid asked a 65-year-old former managing partner for the Southwestern United States for the healthcare for PwC to be the chairman, why would that 64-year-old guy even listen to him? Because he's got no fucking money. Because he's one step above broke more than you. And that's a tragedy. Because the system doesn't work anymore. It just bloody doesn't work. If it worked, all you kids wouldn't be here. Now, when people come to me, I'm the last saloon in the last town on the edge of the earth, and the earth is flat. You've tried everything known to man, and it didn't work. Nobody tells you you're 2,000 cold calls away from being rich because all the guys that you know their names don't want to tell you that. But we got this $69 a quarter program, and we got this and that. My sales training was calling everybody in the White Pages in Manhattan. Everybody. A lot of people in Manhattan. In those days, about 9 million. And by the time I went to the White Pages, I was making 50, 60 grand. Now, this is in the early 70s. 50, 60, 70 grand a month. Not a lot of money, but the 70s did all right. And then my sales manager, Bob, oh, you went through that, kid. Here's the Yellow Pages. Call every cocksucker in the Yellow Pages. By the time I was through that, I was making 100, 150, 200 grand a month. 1974, 75, 76. Not a lot of money. I know chump change you guys. I had two drivers, two rolls, extended, well, I'm 27 years old. But it's all, when we reverse engineered how I made all my money and we put it in a seminar and now online, it's all there. It's all there. And it's free. And as some of the guys used to say, if it's free, it's for me.
So in today's video, I'm going to talk about the different things and odd things about my house and also some facts about it. One odd thing about my house is that I do not have a normal roof. My roof is made out of vinyl from my dad's work that he makes at his work, and it can last up to 20 years.
So why in the fuck don't you dream more? It happens. I still dream.
The kids, the big kids, smart kids, are taping them, their own voice, and listening to them all night. So they work subliminally. Some of the kids go to Fiverr or Tenor, you know, those things online where you can get somebody with a soothing, sexy voice. Okay. And they listen to them all night. I didn't do that. All I did was read them in the morning and read them at night. The last thing I do every night is I fall asleep saying my prayers. My wife can attest to that. I fall asleep every single night saying my prayers. I have for 68 years.
Prayers or affirmations?
No. Affirmations first, prayers last. Prayers, I fall asleep doing, because I don't want to fall asleep during my affirmations. Affirmations, then prayers.
Because your brain doesn't know you're full of shit, or your subconscious doesn't know you're full of shit. And that's why, I mean, programming yourself and your habits really isn't that difficult. When you understand what makes the synapses fire, it's not that hard.
Athletes have been doing this since the first Olympia 2,000 years ago. Affirmation. John Elway saw himself a goal to win a Super Bowl in overtime since he's 6 years old, but he didn't say the first Super Bowl. It took him the third Super Bowl before he won. The kids, it's phenomenal. It's mostly been used over the last 100 years by athletes, and only more recently by business people like yourselves the last 30, 40 years. But it works. Abso-fucking-lutely it works.
We have people, not coincidentally, they're the successful ones that do it five times a day. Five times a day. Okay. Athletes, you know, world champions, gold medalists, all do this.
Believe me, and we're going to, you know, I can't wait. I'm waiting with bated breath to hear you say your affirmations. But they do come true. And Andrew Agassi was saying affirmations when he was 3 or 4 years old. 3 or 4 years old for tennis. And he's the only one I know about, so that I know. But most of the great athletes, Mr. Obama, I don't think much of him as the president. But, I mean, I take my hat off to him vis-a-vis goals and affirmations. When he was a 19-year-old pothead in California at a college, he said, I'm going to be the first black president in the United States. And everything he did was pointed at that. And by God, fuck, it happens. It happened. Notwithstanding, I don't agree with anything he said, but the power. For a guy when he was 19 to say there was going to be a black president, he had to be high. There was no question. He had to be high when he said that.
And that's why affirmations work so effectively. Because your subconscious doesn't know you're full of shit. And when you tell, you know, I'm going to be trillionaire, dominate the world, and your subconscious doesn't know it. And when you tell your subconscious a million times, and then every success you have is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Athletes, world-class athletes, get this just like they took a poop in the morning. World-class athletes, you know, 20 years, they see themselves standing on the podium getting a gold medal at the Olympics. And we're going to have 4 or 5 stories of guys that I personally trained that were able to do that. But you'll never exceed your most audacious goal. If you say, I've got mentees, I'm going to go to the Olympics. They went, they didn't get a medal. I've got mentees that I'm going to go to the Olympics and I'm going to medal. What the fuck that mean? They get a bronze. And I'm only telling you this because your outside environment does affect how you think. And some of the kids do their affirmations, they tape them, and they listen to them all night. All night.
The goal for the team was to go to the state finals. They went to the state finals and lost 2-1.
The next year,
his goal was to win the state finals. They went to the state finals and won 3-4. Is that subtle? It's a big difference between asking Miss Universe out and fucking Miss Universe. Big quantum difference. How many affirmations did you have? I have 22. I told you that. My 22, I told you how they break down. The personal goals, I only have 5 or 6 left. And I have, I think, 6 or 7 affirmations that are associated to those. The rest of mine are related to you, my children, Sally, and a number of the charities that I'm involved in. Begin each affirmation with the words, I am. I am, it means in the present tense. And that means your little pea brain, it'll register in the present tense. Okay. You're going to add an emotion word to each affirmation. I'll give you an example in a minute. You're going to write each affirmation in the present tense using the verb that ends in ing. I'll show you examples in a second. Next, you're going to say each affirmation out loud at least twice a day. You heard Matt say he does his affirmation, I think he said 2 or 3 times, 3 times a day. We have people, not coincidentally, they're the successful ones that do it 5 times a day. 5 times a day. If one of your wants is to increase your net worth by $5 million every month, then you turn it into a goal by writing it down on your goal list as, I want to increase my net worth by $5 million a month or more a month, every month. The affirmation would be, I am happy and easily increasing the amount of my net worth, $5 million or more every month. That's low, a little low, but we'll start for this group, $5 million a month. Okay. The phrase, I am, sends a command to your subconscious so that it can work on this goal for you even while you're asleep. The term happily and easily tell your subconscious that you will not struggle to accomplish this. This works well for me because it also helps me shorten my workday. You may want to use another term that will help you experience the emotions of increased amounts of savings. I use words, fucking, I'm excited, I have a fucking erection, I'm having multiple orgasms, it's so fucking easy. The present tense word increasing creates a stress between you, what you are saying, and reality so that your subconscious acts with a sense of urgency to make this happen. The or more is important also because when you realize how easy it is to increase your savings amount by $5 million a month, you may want to immediately raise the amount. These two little words will have already sent the message to your subconscious and you will reach the monthly amount quicker. The best times to say the affirmations are in the morning when you get up and in the evening just before you go to sleep. By saying them at night, you are commanding your subconscious to work on them while you sleep. By saying them in the morning, you give your subconscious the opportunity to present a report of what it did while you were asleep. The increased focus you experience as a result of this simple activity will produce phenomenal results so that you truly get what you want in life. This is our homework. Any questions about this?
What about short affirmations like, I am a genius, I am intelligent, are there those working too? Or
no. Well, you'd be lying to yourself, but that's not the point. Okay, now, I am confident becoming more innately bright through QLA, because it's a process. It's not I am. Just say I am. I am excited about becoming. I am excited about being. Now, there are all kinds of more complicated ways to write affirmations. You can Google fuck this, and you could write a PhD white paper, which I hope none of you do. This is the simplest format that I've found that works. The operative word part of that is works. There's all kinds of sophisticated shit done on affirmations. Why you do it in the morning and the night? Your brain's in a theta state, and a this state, and all kind of shit. But you don't need any of that. All you need to know is this fucker works.
It's not important that you know why it works. All you need to know is it fucking works. And don't send me in your weekly report a link about the study done at fucking Stanford, and I'm not interested in that. All I know is this fucking thing works. I don't give a fuck what they did at Stanford, MIT, or wherever the other, there's a bunch of other studies done as well.
Like those affirmations we saw that were just tits and ass, but yeah, I'm not telling you to forget the tits and ass, but I mean, money comes to me unexpectedly. I feel overwhelmed but not satiated with money that comes to me unexpectedly. You don't want to be satiated. Satiated means that you get used to it. It becomes your default. I mean, and staying successful, guys, is a hell of a lot fucking harder than getting success. I mean, it's staying because default, I mean, being rich, I haven't had to work in 35 years. You know, some kids at the Jason Capital thing that you were at asked me, how do you get up in the morning? You know, what motivation do you have to get up? That's where the society is now. What do you mean, well, how do I get up in the morning? I mean, I've been, you know, one of the goals you should have, and all of you should have, is that goal is to form new, bodacious, extraordinary habits of the high-performance person, okay? And then your affirmation associated with that is, I'm ecstatic, overwhelmed, how easy I attract good habits, high-performance people, and easily I can lead people, enforce QLA, being all that you can be. I mean, what you need, remember, you're the average of the five people that you hang around with. And right now, for the most part, there's a few exceptions, most of those people are dog shit, okay? And so you want a higher echelon. You want a higher bar. You want higher expectations.
You'll say to your boss one day, you quit. 69% said yes, 31% said no. Do you ever dream that you have a secret power such as the ability to read minds, become invisible, or control other people's actions? 62% said yes, 38% said no. Are you ever shot out of a daydream and unable to answer the question someone has asked you? 45% said yes, 55% said no. And have you had at least one fucking daydream in the last year that you turned into reality? 71% said yes, and 29% said no. So why in the fuck don't you dream more? It happens. I still dream. Had their dreams come to fruition. So it seems like a fucking no-brainer to me. But I got a brain. And apparently most don't. It's so fucking simplistic. Maybe my mom was right letting me believe in Santa Claus till I was 11 fucking years old. My cousins say I was 13. I think that's a stretch, but my older cousins tease me, you know. They also say that I breastfed till I was 11, which is also, I believe, a bit of a stretch, Mom. But, you know. But so why don't we? Because it's not conventional wisdom. It's all right for our kids to do that shit. But not us. Because we're all grown up now. We're adults. And that's so fucking horseshit. Guys, this isn't new shit. You know, when I tell you, dream, in my closing remarks in a few days, dream, get outside the box, be passionate, get selfish, love yourself. You can't love somebody else unless you love yourself. I mean, it works. And it's not new stuff. People have been saying this for not just decades, but thousands and thousands of years. We've shown you enough slides from Plato and all these people from the years, you know, a long time ago. It is. It's not new stuff. But the difference between me and the rest of the industry, if you can call it that, as I'm telling you, it's a motherfucker because it's hard. I'm not telling you it's easy. Because if it was easy, you would have already done it. With all the fucking shit you read, you fucking idiot, and all the pod fucks you've listened to, and all, if it was so bloody fucking easy, you'd already be there.
Okay, what's the affirmation associated with that goal? Now, that could easily be broken down to 4 or 5 goals, okay? 4 or 5 goals, excuse me, 4 or 5 goals do not have to have 4 or 5 affirmations. One affirmation can be all-inclusive for the 4 or 5 goals. Now, go,
Leonard.
Now, just to give you an aside, when I came up with this, I wanted to be with a castle on an island with a moat, da-da-da-da, and I see my children playing tennis, playing golf on our own golf course. I see the our governesses and nannies that once worked in the Buckingham Palace. I saw that, okay. I see myself strutting around the property, and I visualize this with my boots and my riding crop, being the most influential gentleman farmer in Scotland. No, that's what I saw, okay. It's before I had that fucking painting, before I had any of this. And so that's what I would say twice a day. Okay. Go ahead.
Do I have to?
No, you don't have to. Okay.
Got only a goal?
One goal and an affirmation.
Okay. Help kids to go private school and start their business. Well, my kids are start driving their businesses and being more successful in their areas.
Okay, you got to add more adjectives. You got to make it more colorful. So words, that, remember, can't be too bodacious, can't be too overwhelming. You know, for example, if you wanted your kids to, you know, go into space, I see them walking on the moon. I see them easily going to flight school. I see them easily taking off the first time with the jet thrust. I feel the G's of the jet thrust. I mean, you got to really elaborate. Again, because your subconscious doesn't know that it, you know, it's just bullshit. And the more you say it, I mean, the athletes understand this. When, you know, when they're talking about they're in the third or fourth year of skiing, I see myself, you know, winning the downhill by a full 2 seconds, which is virtually impossible, by the way. You don't win downhill by you win it by 2/100ths of a second. I see myself in the cold wind on my face, accepting the gold medal. I accept the accolades and the applause of the Austrian people, if you're Austrian, or the Russian people, if you're Russian, or the American people, if you're American. I see, I mean, you've got to really throw yourself into it. You really have to go over the top. Okay.
Mine's not that specific.
Okay, well, tell me, and then I'll make it specific when I tart it up.
I am passionately adding more and more money and happiness.
Okay, what's the goal, though? The goal?
And $30,000 is buying whatever I want.
30,000. Well, you know, I would have made the goal. I feel it's well within my comfort zone having unlimited expenses daily. Then the affirmation, I am wildly overwhelmed with joy, knowing that no matter how much money I spend, it's not a dent, it's not a fraction, it's not chump change. I mean, and there are people in the world that have no, you know. Sally sometimes thinks she's one, but she has no limits to not her abilities, her ability to spend money. You want this, and when you talk to your kids about affirmations, and you can start affirmations at 3, 4, 5 years old. You start with goals. With kids, you start goals first, then affirmations. So when they get used to the goals and they understand the goals, then you add the affirmations. If you add the affirmations with kids too early, with the goals, they get confused. Okay, now I'm talking about 3, 4, 5 years old. If your kid's 18 years old, he's not going to get confused. Okay, almost everybody understands goals. Very few people understand the affirmations that are associated with goals.
Bye.
here at It's My House, and when you hear that, it's time for the John Thompson segment, John Thompson's Brazil, and we have calling in from Rio de Janeiro, Mr. John Thompson. Good afternoon, Mr. Thompson.
Good afternoon, my brother. How you doing today?
Fine, fine. Well, some states here, we're still on this pandemic thing. Some states here, about, I guess, 20 and counting, are starting to slowly reopen. I'm in Florida, so the state of Florida, which has 67 counties, is, well, two counties opened like last week or the week before. And then where I'm at, as well as, let's say, at least 264, well, no. Around, let's see, 67 minus 2, 65. All right, what about 60, 61 counties starting on Monday, May 1st, will start phasing in what they, you know, they have two, three phases. They'll be phasing in the reopening, except for Broward County, Miami, in Palm Beach County, which they're all, those three are connected, and they're heavily populated. But so, Mr. Thompson, what's going on in Brazil? Is Brazil reopening? Or any date for that set?
No, well, right now there's no dates, and it appeared that the count of the amount of deaths is not being truly noted, especially when it comes to the favelas, where probably you have your greatest problem, and they don't have the proper medical care, not food and what have you that's necessary. For that reason, we did the toy drive, not the toy drive, but the food drive for the one of the favelas last week. Because we were called from the church that they had a lack of food, and we were really concerned about the children that we have been supporting there for the last few years. So our president is really denying, it's like Trump denying that this crisis we look at is just a virus. So that's a big problem. And then we look like we have also problem with within the with presidency and between the Supreme Court here and the Congress. So we have twofold problems politically as well as the virus.
Well, now, because you're in Rio de Janeiro, which is known for the beaches and whatnot. Are people like, I think California, the governor there shut down all the beaches. What about there in Rio?
Well, Rio, the beaches are shut down. The beaches are shut down. A few of the kiosks, what they call little restaurants, on the beach side. A couple of them are taking orders, you know, takeout orders.
Mm-hmm.
All your major restaurants on the other side of the beach, you know, it's all where the hotels that are all basically closed. So a few of the maybe some of the beauty parlors, I know they called me to get my feet done the other day and blah, blah, blah. They're open now. Some of the little small stores, but by and large, the majority of them are closed.
So, God, those beans, I mean, those are not beans, but those businesses, I mean, I'm at, because Rio relies, I guess their number one source of revenue is tourism, isn't it?
Tourism and oil, and then we have a problem in the oil industry because there's a lot of loans given to the companies, and that's a crisis now, the way they're trying to negotiate with America and oil firms in Texas and what have you. So we have several issues in Brazil right now, but we have hope, and I think it brought a lot of the good out of a lot of people too, you know, and trying to help others, and you know, and I wrap my coins up every day when I go out in the street because I know several homeless. I done went from doctor now to, they called me a chief the other day. So
okay.
I just wrap it up and throw it to them in the street. And, you know, and many of them look for me every day when I go, whenever I pass the supermarket. So I think I have a lot of goodness is going to come out of this in spite of the sad death tolls.
Right. Now, you've got now, this question I'm about to ask you now. Okay, because you're originally from the States, New York. Well, I mean, spent a lot of time in New York career-wise. So you've got a retirement income from there, but you also have a business in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. So with your American cash flow, I guess that's the hedge against, I mean, because I imagine right now you do accommodation, you help people with accommodations when vacationing in Rio de Janeiro. I'm imagining that's taking a hit.
Well, everyone is taking, you know.
Everybody's taking
a hit right now.
Yeah.
As far as the hotel industries and the rental and Airbnb and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
We're all taking a hit right now because the international flights are not allowed, especially in the United States. They extended it 30 more days.
Mm.
So everything is a wait and see, you know, and we have to look at the virus. And
well, the question I want to ask now is for people, particularly of any age, okay, because like I say, you financially, you've got an income coming in regardless. So what advice would you offer to a person who's thinking about becoming an expat on how they can basically protect themselves financially so if plan B doesn't work or plan C, you've got a plan A that's giving you the cash flow to sustain yourself?
Well, just like you, well, that's the main thing. To become an expat, you need the cash flow to sustain yourself, and that's number one. I was talking to a gentleman from New Orleans. A couple other brothers called me, some businessmen in the banking industry. The main thing is to, I would recommend to black Americans, basically, is to get you, make sure you get a job that have a pension attached to it, a city, government, whatever, or if you develop your own pension system, whatever. But that's the main thing, because you don't want to live in a country that you have to depend on your, based on your business to sustain you only. That's not enough. You need a backup plan, however it may be in your investment in real estate in the States and what have you. Those with money right now, the real estate is dropping like crazy in the United States, the prices of real estate. So that's why this is for the rich. This is the perfect time for them. They can become, instead of being their trillionaires, because they can buy whatever they want to buy right now. So for the Trumpites and all of them, this is a great opportunity for them. But for the working class, man, is rough.
Now, the jobs that with the good benefits and the pension plan, it's not what it used to be, you know, when you were coming up.
For sure.
I agree with you. If that's a person, if they're interested in that, see what opportunities are out there, number one. Now, with this coronavirus, which is, I guess it's taking a hit on everybody all the way around, can you suggest anything a person might do to create their own pension plan?
You in the States?
States, anywhere. Well, states are anywhere.
Well, in the States, you know, real estate is always a great opportunity. You know, real estate. I mean, young man, you law enforcement, which I was in, law enforcement, college, you know, going to school, getting a sound education, lawyers, doctors, medicine. There's a lot of areas, electrician, you know, there are many, many areas you have to be dedicated and really want to succeed, and you put all your effort in it. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I like law enforcement. Obvious reason, it gave me the opportunity. But at the same time, young blacks, you have to make sure that you don't get yourself caught up on the wrong side of the street, you know, and what have you. You got to, you know, it was difficult when I was coming up because New York was flooded with gangs, and in the 50s, that was the life of New York. You wasn't in a gang, you had a problem.
Right.
That was just life in New York around the 50s, and you find that even Colin Powell was in a gang in the Bronx. It was part of life, you know.
Well, law enforcement, I know the people who've been involved with law enforcement in one way or another, including the administrative side of it. And they got a steady paycheck and steady retirement. So that is a viable option to look at. Matter of fact, one of the former chiefs of police in Washington, D.C., he wasn't even thinking about a career in law enforcement, but he was looking for a job at the time. And somebody recommended, said, well, you know, they're hiring down at the police station. And he went down and applied and got the job. He started as the office, I guess, a beat cop. And, you know, worked his way up. I guess he learned the politics of it to get up to the chief of police position. But, and there's a whole lot of, I guess, besides beat cop, you got all types of forensics, detectives. I guess there's a whole lot of options in law enforcement.
Yeah, even in the state, city, federal, and in the transit, transportation. Because look at the virus. You still need your bus drivers. Still need your motormen. You need this. You need that.
True.
But the young people have to get motivated and look positive and stay away from the negative side of growing up in certain environments, the drugs, whatever. And you have to be focused, you know. You have to be focused. Along the way, I had some mentors, like the Judge Jackson, Judge Thompson, William Thompson, and many mentors I had in Brooklyn, black and white, that helped me mold myself in some of the difficult times growing up in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. Well, yeah, your mentors, vitally important, vitally important. Let's go to the phone lines here, area code 314. You're on with Mr. Thompson here. Good morning, 314.
Good morning, LA. I was just listening.
Okay.
Basically.
All right, no. Yeah, go ahead. We're listening.
I guess.
You were okay. I got what you're saying. You were basically.
Well, I was listening, and I was wondering how things are going on in other countries. You know, the thing here in the United States, these governors are shutting down beaches, but people feel mm-hmm. that they got a right to go on the beach if they want to. That's the liberty to do so. I guess they don't have those type of the constitution don't exist in Brazil the same way. And we see governors local authorities trying to even restrict gun sales and ammunition sales, saying that I don't know how they correlate that with a coronavirus, which is in effect a virus. But you was getting ready to say something?
Yeah, Mr. Thompson, you had a comment for that?
No, I was going to relate to, it's going to the beach. What's important, going to the beach, you're trying to save lives. So you have to make a distinction. You want to go. If you keep the distance and everything, a proper distance that the state requires, that's a different thing. But we need to get this pandemic over with, then go back to normal. There's not going to be normal life in the future. This is probably going to last sometimes, not going to be no. When it comes to guns, I think we're in the United States, we have enough guns. Brazil, we have enough guns, enough ammunition. What are we going to do, just kill each other? I mean, I don't know. I have a different opinion about firearms. I got firearms myself and sons and cousins and all that. But the thing about it, what are we going to do, kill everybody? We need to talk about love. I think we need to bring love in our lives. And like Marvin say, save the children. That's my concern, save the children. That's what I've been working on. When I'm not renting, I'm here working with the children in the favelas. Save the children. That's what I'm about.
I know in the state of Michigan, you have some people that
they challenging the state legislature,
right,
which is a U.S. citizen. They should be doing that. You can't
put
some
of them armed also.
Well, they got a right to carry their guns in that environment. But you can't put the Constitution on hold. It doesn't have an on-off button based on a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had the President of the United States gave out advice, which he can only do. He knows what to do. But governors in the states are in violation of people's liberties by telling them they can't attend funerals and so on and so on. Now, citizens should have enough sense and intelligence to understand. But when you start making those type of moves, then where does it ever stop? So I support that type of protest myself.
Well, they've had them in Michigan, Minnesota, somewhere else. Oh, yeah, I can't. Well, at least those two. Oh, Michigan, Minnesota. Something's going on in Texas, but I can't. I mean, it's.
Next thing they're going to have is
when you
the
start
nation.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing
you're
going to
have. Let me say something. When you start talking about protesting, there should have been a protest. The president knew about it, and he went on campaigns, and he was saying that it was just a little thing as a Democratic hoax on one of the videos. And this way before it became a real serious issue. He knew about it, and you look at all his speeches and everything, and he did nothing at that time. So you got to give blame on both sides. The governor think about his citizen, and look how it impacted the minorities more than any other group. The minorities, where you have a lack of proper health, poor
healthcare.
Health conditions and what have you. So it affected us more than anyone else. If anything, we need to try to get together, unite, and figure from this point on how we're going to work together to make a life better for minorities. Since I'm a minority, I got to think about my people, and this is what we need to do.
Well, you know, we heard people say that, but viruses don't have no prejudices. They said that in St. Louis, said that in the black community there was no facilities, and that turned out to be false. You have over 37, as reported by one business or one organization that tracks facilities. They free and for reduced, so they can't afford them. If you don't have no income, you can be treated, and it's based on a sliding scale. And then you had NPR on the 16th, I believe, or maybe the 11th of April, said that 84% of the deaths in St. Louis were black. Well, that there is misleading. Blacks make up, I think, 157,000 in the city of St. Louis. I think they 42% or something of that nature. But at the time, it was only 19 deaths, or 17 deaths, and of those, 14 was black. In a city that's 150-some-odd-thousand people. So there's some misleading information. If you follow Louisiana, it's the same, with putting percentages out rather than number count. So, and the virus is not killing people. It's underlying issues. But, you know, when you're in other countries, people can't complain and challenge governments like they do here in the United States. And that's the difference. But everything has its good and bad. his desires and undesires.
I agree with you on that, for sure.
And you know, another point, too, you're talking about what Trump knew. Fauci, in January, early January, said that the virus would not be a problem. He's on video saying that. And the president is taking advice from people in the profession, people that's there to advise on those issues, the same way he would in case if it was a military action. But he did put a travel ban in around January the 31st, and then Congress accused him of being racist.
You talking about that when he did the travel ban for some European countries?
For China.
No, he's in China.
Okay.
And
he
was accused of being a racist even when he done that. So I think he act in good time. The first case was, what, 21st? And it was Washington State. And I think some agency came out and said that, no, it was in California. But, no, I think he moved accordingly.
Well, the president does get a security briefing every morning. Every president gets a security briefing every morning. So, and usually the public obviously doesn't know what's in that briefing. So that's probably what they had them put on that travel.
But I want to see the economy get back open again. You can't let a pandemic close down a trillion, what is it, $13 trillion economy. You have more people being hurt from that than you would a virus. And then here, too, separating, putting limits on people who either had it and got over it and who don't have it at all. So that there is still subjective. If you got establishments that want people that come into the establishment to have on masks, they got a right to do that. People can walk around outside on beaches and everything without a mask. So if they want to, that's their liberty to do those things. They were doing that before that. Hey, just think, LA, when I used to go in the stores with a mask on, before this came up, people would scream, holler, throw up their arms, and call the police. Now I go into a store without a mask on, they want to call the police on me. I can't win for losing.
I think what this period of time is doing is, what they call it, necessity is the mother of invention. So I think you're going to see some people become millionaires out of this whole thing.
Oh, they are.
I don't know how they're going to pull it off with beaches and public, you know, clubs and all that type thing, but somebody will think of something if they haven't done it
already. Well, you know, the thing that gets me, you know, Willie Wilson in Chicago has a business that he was selling masks. He had them by the tens of thousands. And the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, and the governor of Chicago, Pritchett spent $1.4 million, as it is reported, and went to China talking about buying masks when one of the Illinois citizens was in the business of selling masks. So that just goes to show.
Mr. Thompson, anybody getting creative down there, entrepreneurial-wise, in Rio, that's come across your radar yet?
Opportunities?
Yes.
Well, I would say in real estate, you know, when it's over with, I'm quite sure there should be a lot of apartments for sale, and, you know, you can buy and rent out. I believe that, to me, that's probably one of the best opportunities, and at least give you, you know, the income and the value. You know, if anything happened, you still have something to fall back on. So that would be my recommendation.
Now, with that said, the price of rentals, because you deal in rentals down there, when the economy of Rio starts back up, in your opinion, I guess it depends on what people are trying to rent. Will prices remain the same as they were before, or reduced, or what?
Well,
vacation rentals.
Hey, it's a good question, and I would say it's going to have to be a waiting see. I think prices would probably be less because you would have a huge supply and not a lot of demands.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a waiting see, and we have to wait.
Yeah, you're true. Wait and see.
Yeah, that's a good question.
But I guess after people get, you know, what's amazing is, one thing that we knew, but we definitely know for sure, is there's a whole bunch of people, at least in not only the United States, but globally, that are just maybe a couple of paychecks away from the poorhouse. I think, 30 million people have applied for unemployment here in the States. I got friends in Southeast Asia, matter of fact, all over the place, that they're not eating, to be honest about it, or barely eating. All depends on where they are.
Mm-hmm. And look at the long lines for line up cars for the food bank in the United States. So
mm-hmm.
Online, two hours, 3 hours. It's terrible.
Now, do they have that concept in Rio, food banks?
No, there are several, charity organizations assisting right now. Not that I know, but, you know, the thing about it, most of them don't go to the favelas. And that's where you have your major crisis in the poor community, the favelas.
Now, in the favelas, is there anybody, because some people have like little rooftop gardens or window gardens or tabletop gardens. Anybody that, like, to your knowledge, attempt to grow a tomato plant or two in the favelas?
No, not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. If any, it's very small, but not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Depends on the local supermarkets and.
I'm trying to get more of I've seen pictures of favelas and videos. In the favelas, do they have, like, grocery stores, convenience stores, any type of merchant setups?
Yes, they do. They have some, you know, mom-and-pop stores there in the favelas. I know a few owners.
Okay.
Yes, they do have in the favelas.
Now, the people in the favelas, is that where they mostly go shopping, just locally within the favelas, or they go in and out?
No, they're in and out. They go normally. If you have your markets, if it's on a hill, it's probably at the bottom of the hill, like in Hosea, one of the largest favelas in South America. They're based at the base of the favela. You know?
Okay.
So they have, but then a lot of them come shop here in Copacabana. So the group that from the church, they shopped in Copacabana at a low price supermarket here, and I met them at the supermarket. I met them after they got their list together. About $1,000 and something, I thought they were going to stop. Then it went up to $2,000, so I had to go to the bank and come back. That was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, since I'm on a, you know, I'm 70-something years old, I just wait outside. When they finish, I go back in and I just paid for everything and say goodbye to them, and that was it. They had a van to pick all the food up. They must have about 6 or 7 or 8 shopping carts filled up with food.
What about, now, if a person likes rural areas, like I'm one of these, I like rural areas, how far do you have to travel from Rio de Janeiro proper to a rural area near there?
I'd say about an hour and a half.
Okay, 90.
Yeah, about an hour and a half. And you're in most of the rural area. On the other side of the huge bridge here, they call the Guanabara Bridge, will take you to a city called Niterói. Then after Niterói, you're going right into some of your rural, the beginning of your rural areas.
Okay. You need to learn Portuguese before you step in those areas, probably.
Yeah, do Brazil banks sell treasury
brother?
Bills?
Now,
Brazil
you
bank.
Need to know Portuguese if you go into the rural areas down there.
Yeah, but the gentleman was asking me, did the Brazil bank sell treasury bills? I believe so. I'm not 100%. I believe so. But like I say, the banks are having some, we're having some serious economical and financial problems now based due to the oil and the dependency of oil.
Go ahead, Priyanka, I'm listening.
The Bank of Ghana's treasury bills is 20, right at 21% for a three-year fixed bond. It's funny how that worked. For 1 year, it's 16.74. If a person had $100,000 in the bank, it'd be like $16,730-some-odd a year interest. Heck, you can live like a king in that country for that type of money.
In Ghana?
Yes, sir.
I know somebody, I don't know her personally, but I watched her videos. She went over to Ghana, bought some land. Now she's developing her own little village over there from scratch.
Yeah, people do do that. There was is one area there, Coco Breedy, where people would build.
You hear? Oh,
and you could rent that out,
matter of fact,
to lease
I'm looking
that
at
out
the currency exchange
on a
right
year
now,
basis.
Brazil's got a the dollar's pretty strong down in Brazil right now.
Yes, it is. 5.41 yesterday.
Yeah. 5.41. Yeah, boy, you have a real good time down that way. Well, provided you know.
Yeah.
Well, matter of fact, let me ask you this question. I saw a video on this on another country.
So that's what people do.
Matter of fact,
they...
it was in the Philippines. Americans who have gotten stranded in the Philippines. Do you run across or hear stories about an occasional American who's come down to Brazil and they become stranded?
They got stranded down
here? Yeah, in Brazil.
Yeah, I know one brother got stranded, yeah. With the virus, yeah, I know one.
Well, no, not because of the virus. Let's say pre-virus, but before that, they came down there and they just didn't anticipate how to spend their money.
No, I don't know of anyone that got stranded wasn't able to get back to the United States.
Okay, all right.
To relatives or friends. I don't know of a person who've gotten in that situation.
Okay, yeah, no, they've had people, there's some stories of people, you know, Americans who've gone to the Philippines, and I guess they had a little nest egg and didn't develop, first thing, didn't have a sustainable source of cash flow coming in. They just had that nest egg, and I don't know what they were thinking, because typically in a foreign country, unless you got certain skills or work online, it's very difficult to get a job in many countries for an expat.
Exactly.
So that's why I asked that question.
And the language barriers are
huge. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, it's May 1st, 2020. And it looks like at least the United States, at least, is attempting to come off a pause. Because I think in the Philippines, they're still on lockdown until May 15th. But in this country, New York State is on pause until May 15th. So is Washington, D.C. The state of Illinois is on pause until the end of this month. And then I think they extended their pause, I think, in Michigan. That's one of the reasons why they were protesting, I believe.
Ohio have a problem too, right?
Yeah. Ohio's got citizens there upset. So, and then with, I think the NBA has been on pause, but it's a debate whether it'll be, you know, the rest of the season will be canceled. Baseball, football, I don't know. But like I said, at the end of this month, the year's half gone. So Because I'm sort of like looking at today as instead of May 1st, it's sort of like January 1st. So, it's, you know, it, if anybody who had those New Year's resolutions, you've had some time to get yourself in order and whatnot. Now, for people that haven't got, let's say January 1st, they didn't have their money together to go to Rio, and they've got it together now or near getting it together, and they're still interested in coming down to South America to Brazil. Mr. Thomas, could you give your information, because they can call you for accommodations, and what they need to get prepared for before they hit, get, you know, even book a ticket?
Well, they need to prepare. Well, since after with this virus, we don't know how things are going to be as far as the medical situation here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know how the planes, what are the guidelines will be for traveling. Because they may require you to have masks. I don't know. That's something that's
speaking of
ongoing
which,
situation right now.
Talk about health insurance. Do you recommend, along with that ticket, people get themselves some health insurance before flying over?
Definitely. Definitely. With things, the way things are happening right now, it's a good, very good idea to have health insurance. You know, they have these flight policy. I guess you can get it just for one flight or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At least they had it years ago, and that's a good idea, very good idea. They have insurance and a temporary insurance for you for travel insurance.
Yeah, I recommend that. Oh yeah, on those, you know, particularly long haul destinations, I recommend it. It really doesn't cost that much.
No, it doesn't. And then you know, really get to know. Try to know something about the environment that you enter. They can always call me, and I can update them on what's going on here, because I've been here long enough.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. Know the environment in advance. One thing I can recommend, particularly if you're going to a tropical climate, I give you a story about myself. When I was in the Philippines, now, I'm supposed to be drinking about 4 liters of water there because I'm 6'8". I had to drink 8 liters of water a day when I was over there. That's the only way I would feel so-called normal. I also over there had to eat breakfast. Something like, you know, fruit. Nothing heavy. And if I ate in the morning, ate breakfast, like if I just had a banana, what I did was I got in the habit of eating 2 bananas or 2 pieces of fruit in the morning, and then I just drank water bottled water, or fruit juice, or I did a combination of the two. Around the clock, I mean, overnight, I would drink 4 liters of water. But that's the only way in that climate that I felt normal. Now, when I got back over here, you know, I can get away with drinking maybe about 3, sometimes 4 liters of water. But for there in that climate, and I don't take any medication like that, so I'm just glad I knew how hydration is a very important part, particularly when it comes to my body. But you're right. Matter of fact, Bianca, you mentioned something about over in Africa, the environment.
Is the gentleman still there?
Yeah, I think. Well, his light's still on.
But, you know, one thing has happened. I've changed my eating habits down. If you see pictures of those plates I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
So and every day I prepare, and my meals, all my meals have fruits and vegetables every
right.
meal now. So I like my salads and my fruit. So I made a 360-degree turnaround in my eating habits now. So that's one positive thing that came out of it for me.
Yeah, you're right.
I sent pictures around to my buddies.
Matter of fact, I'm looking at these pictures now. Thanks for sending them. You know what? That's very important. Matter of fact, speaking of which, Mark Lyles, who I guess you met him when he was down there.
Mark Lyles?
No, Mark Lyles. He passed away about 6 or 7 months before Charles Tyler.
Yeah.
When he was down there, he had taken pictures, you know, as which we all do, of, you know, some of the meals he was about to eat. But every picture that he had of food, of the meals that he was about to take, was fried foods and whatnot. Now, I'm not saying that's all he ate, but he died of a heart attack. But you're right. You got to take note of to eat it so it's as healthy as possible. So if you want to dibble and dabble with fried foods every once in a while, it won't hurt you.
But like I said, you have to get your exercise.
True.
I do. I walked yesterday. I think I must have walked about 2 miles. And then after I came in, I was up about an hour or something, washing my clothes and doing that whole thing you have to do with the virus and everything. So by the time I finished all that, I was tired as hell.
Well, nothing wrong. I got a friend of mine. His mother, she's in her, she might be in her 90s now. She walks 2 miles a day. That's how she got up to the 90s. And plays golf every Saturday. Now, what's interesting, she had 2 sons. I went to high school with one of her sons, and the oldest son, he passed away at 58. And the difference between the two, I would say exercise. Because he didn't walk to two, he didn't do any kind of walking like that, and he didn't play golf. His brother, little brother, plays golf with the mother every Saturday to this day. So you're right, the 2 miles a day. When I walk, when I don't feel like walking, I just put in my head, you know what, let me walk to people who can't walk who are not here to walk.
That's a beautiful concept.
And particularly unassisted. All right, because you got some people on walkers. You gotta move. You definitely gotta move.
Well, how do you do your banking? You have deposits in U.S. banks and draw on cards?
I use debit cards, and I use PayPal and Venmo and stuff like that.
I'm talking about him in Brazil.
Oh, Mr. Thompson.
Oh, my banking. Well, everything goes right to my bank account.
In the States?
Everything go to my bank account.
Yeah, in the States.
Sir.
Because, well, I tell you what. The Democrats is talking about when Social Security, because you say you're in your 70s, get to a point they're going to start adjusting people who live abroad Social Security based on the cost of living what country they're in. And I don't know how they're going to do that since the money is not deposited in a foreign bank. It's deposited in a U.S. bank. What about medical? Medicare don't work.
Say that again. I meant Medicare. Say that again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what about medical? Medicare don't work outside the country.
My plan work here. My plan, if I have any emergency, my plan will work anywhere in the world.
All right.
I was in New York law enforcement, so there's a whole difference. The plan's a whole different there. I mean, I get a bill from a company, whatever the service I had to, you know, emergency or whatever, get a bill from them, send it to my medical plan. I retired in Tier 1. That was before the Tier 2. Came in with, you know, based on your money you put in the account or some whatever thing. But I was Tier 1. Whatever I made last year, I get pension from that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plus additional.
And that's what it is with a lot of people. I know people that moved into other country, and that's all they got is Social Security, a minimum amount, $800 a month or something like that. And that just won't cut it.
Well, that depends on your lifestyle. No, that depends on two things, Bianca, your lifestyle and then what country you're in.
True.
Well, here's the thing.
I would say lifestyle is probably the biggest factor in how far your money goes.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you're going to go, for instance, if you're in Ghana, I talk about that one. Mm-hmm. If you stand in an apartment, they're going to charge you U.S. rates. I mean, that's just what they do. Now, if you can move, if you're thinking about retiring or having a occupancy in another country for a duration of a year, of a period of time, if you build your own home, and if you have your own car, your transportation, that there puts you ahead of the game. You can hire, it depends on who you are, you can always hire a maid and a gardener. And the gardener can act as a chauffeur. And you're not talking about much money there at all. But that's the way, you can't work in those countries unless you start some little shop or something. But if you talk about a million people moving back to a country, a million people ain't going to start no shops.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, and I don't know where to find the statistics on it, but I imagine the percentage of expats, particularly Black American expats, going to Brazil or Ghana or any country is like, man, super. That's what, probably less than 1%.
And then, too, when you go into these countries, you have to do things with the same precautions that you do in the United States. You know, they don't have the type of laws of people there rip you off all the time, especially when it comes to buying land. They'll sell you a piece of property, a piece of lot, over and over and over again. But the best way is to get a lawyer, a real estate lawyer, and start off from that point. Don't be buying land from somebody, say, I got this lot and I got that lot, and you take it on face value, you end up being in trouble. And I know people who've done that, lost thousands of dollars of doing that.
Well, usually here in Brazil, we don't, basically, the land is, you go to the mayor's office, they have an office set up throughout the state of Rio de Janeiro, and you can always find out that who owns the land. You can look at the, in the computer, they have it set up where you can show where that land went from one person to another person, whether it's apartment, apartments or land, and you can, and always you get a lawyer. That is the best thing, always have a lawyer, but we have a pretty good control of that here in the state of Rio de Janeiro. I know brothers live in the states that own land here in Rio. None of them have had any problems.
Well, Mr. Thompson, let me ask you this. Here in the states, if you don't pay, like, for instance, the states, you know, people, they think they bought a piece of real estate, which includes the house, and they have a deed with their name on it. And if they don't pay the taxes, the house is gone. I mean, you know, the local government can put the house up for sale. Now, and I don't call that real ownership. You're just playing glorified rent. You got equitable rights. Now, in Brazil, if you buy a piece of land or land with a house on it, are there property taxes that you have to pay with that?
Yeah, there are certain taxes that you're required to pay here. I've owned a couple of places here over the years, and you're required. I mean, but the government is pretty lenient. They give you some time to get it, to get your act together, what have you. So they don't just take your property like that. We do have a pretty good system here, in the justice system here, that's pretty good. So I don't know of anyone losing their property in that respect. They would give you an opportunity to get your act together and pay for it.
Okay. Well, they got a lot of people.
Now, see, in Africa, you never own that land. That land belongs to.
Okay.
But in Ghana, it belongs to that chieftaincy, to that stool in that region that you're in. Now, you lease the land. Indigenous people can have a 50-year lease. I'm sorry, 99-year lease. Outsiders can have a 50-year lease. And what you pay, like what you're talking about, real estate taxes here, you pay to that authority in the area you're in. If it's a village,
see,
you pay
I think that's
chief.
Just the way you just explained it is more honest. People get that. They don't own it. Because really, in the United States, you don't own land. Now, you might get a deed with your name on it, and that just gives you equitable rights.
I switched over. Yeah, United States, you don't have no time frame on it. In those countries, you have. So after that 50 years, they may take the land back. See, here you can put that deed, quit claiming that deed to a son or daughter here in the United States. And, you know, you just go on and on and on and on. But over there, it's not like that. When that 50 years is up, you have to go through sort of like a little trial, and I have never lived long enough to see that happen. But it depends on how you have been interactive with community. If they favorable of you, they let it go another 50 years. If they don't, they say you got to go, and you can't take the building.
See, that's why I'd rather.
You can't put the bill
like
in the trunk of your car.
Yeah.
Well, I love Rio. There's no question about that. I fell in love 35 years ago.
Well, it's been very good to you and others as well, because you've got a number of I know just from Charles' show there's a handful of people who relocated down there, got married to locals and whatnot, learned the language
I think I've been in here the longest.
Oh yeah, hands down.
When did you go down there?
I was the governor drive in New York, you know. I was the governor drive years ago in New York.
Yeah.
When the governor of Rio, we had a black governor, a female friend of mine, and
how many years? Charles wasn't really down there that long. I mean, traveling back and forth.
No, Charles wasn't.
Yeah, maybe it was less than 5 years, something like that.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. I think I sent you a copy of the picture where they had a group picture, and I think it was 2016.
Mm-hmm.
We must have had about 50-some people, and that was probably one of the biggest events that him and I was able to get brothers together. That was for the Black Holiday of Zumbi.
Right. I remember him talking about that.
Yeah, every year, for years I've been doing a celebration for the Black Holiday Zumbi. Even before they had a Black Holiday, I was protesting when the Black movement here for a holiday many years ago when we didn't have a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I want to find out what's really going on, I reach out to my Black movement group, and they always can fill me in on what's happening around the country. And there's a channel they have too. I'm gonna send that to you there.
Okay, great.
And they talk about what's happening here. He just made himself my friend, George De Silva, who was the ex-commander of the police here. We've been knowing each other for years too. I gave some honors to him and what have we. We worked out something to honor him. And George De Silva is a good friend of mine, and he was the police commander here for several years.
Well, like I said, I haven't been down there yet, but as a matter of fact, I know it seems like a place, all the romanticized stories you hear about, seems like a place that you go there and you might not want to come back. And there are people, I guess, that have actually done that. They went and didn't come back, and then, or they when they came back, they were crying.
Brazilians have a warm way of treating you. That's rare, I think, in many parts of the world. Probably similar to many parts of the world too, but they're unusual
Even the guy who sold, you know, the communication system here, at the, you know, the cable, because I don't even watch cable, but the phone and internet and all that, when he made the sales call here, sitting in the car helping him, was his wife, who was from Brazil. So must be something going on down there that's very, very positive and whatnot. Okay, well, Mr. Nelson, give us your information again, and then we're going to sign off for the weekend.
No problem. Well, my email is Brazil, BRAZIL, Games, GAMES, BrazilGames1, at gmail.com. And you can reach me at 646-485-6055. And also you can check out my Facebook page, John H. Thompson. You probably see Real next to it. And so those are the ways you can get in touch with me.
Okay. Oh, now, like I say, it's May 1st. Anything on a calendar, well, or like the beach party was what, November typically?
Typically in November. Like I say, everything is on hold now.
Okay,
we plan
right.
On honoring some people from individuals from the United States, like Judge Jackson wrote Black Keeper of the Bible, and members of the law enforcement organization in New York, Charles Billups, president of Grand Council Guard. And I plan on honoring them in November, but everything is on hold now, and I don't know what's
going on. That's true. The Olympics, they canceled that until next year, and there's a whole bunch of things that were supposed to happen this year. March Madness got canceled this year, and they just totally wiped that out from all of it. And there'll probably be
Gerald
a few Austin more things.
Manhattan's supposed to be doing a show in September. Gerald and I have been friends for many years. So I'm going to call him up. I don't know what's going to happen with that, too, because for the last 3 years, they have performed here in Rio for the last 3 years.
Mm.
And I was planning on seeing them again this year, but they may have to cancel that.
You're right, because as they slowly open in phases over here, or anywhere,
exactly.
Then, you know, domestic flights, international flights, and what are going to be requirements. I think some airlines, Delta, JetBlue, their stewardess or their flight crew will be wearing masks as the usual thing, and I guess they'll require that of passengers, and then the TS, you know, so it. There's going to be a new normal.
Yeah, and how would you have social distances on a plane?
You know what? You're right, because on a flight, Airbus, everybody's sitting close to each other.
Right next to each other.
You're right. I saw one picture where the seats were reconfigured differently, but still people were literally sitting right next to each other. So I don't know how they're going to work that.
Right.
Anyway, well, we'll see. All right, Mr. Thompson, thank you. Thank you, Fianchi.
Thank
you, everybody, for listening. Everyone have a great rest of the day and great weekend.
Thank you.